Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The all-new Hyundai Tucson is Ireland's best-selling car this year. And it's also got the Irish motoring press talking. The Irish Times write, Hyundai has a hit on its hands. The Irish Independent says, a daring revamp that pushes the boundaries. The Sunday Independent write, it's a massive step forward. And the Sunday World say, the new Hyundai Tucson is absolutely amazing. The all-new Tucson, Ireland's best-selling car, now available in diesel, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. Best-selling car this year as based on most recently published monthly figures.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking Points, Planet F1's podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be discussing the Tuscan Grand Prix, which it also wasn't too bad, was it? I mean, there's clearly just something about Formula One in Italy this year, isn't there? Joining me to discuss the race is Michelle Foster. Michelle, it's not been a bad 2 weeks of racing, has it?
It's been a rather intense few weeks of racing. I mean, Formula One's really delivered the last 2 weeks in a row. And, I mean, that's great because we were unfortunately a bit concerned that Mugello would be a bit of a boring one. And it proved to be anything but.
Yeah, it was polar opposite. Covering it, I looked at it and I thought, where the hell are we going to start when we cover this on the podcast? Because, I mean, there's just so much to look at. But, I don't know. I think the best place to start is probably with all the carnage that ultimately is what made it such an interesting race. I mean, there's not too much to say about the first lap incident that brought out the safety car. I think that's fairly standard stuff on a new track, turn one. But, yeah, that wasn't the case with the safety car restart, which caused a red flag, because, I mean, that was dangerous stuff. Obviously, Bottas took a while to get his restart going. The back of the grid thought he'd already gone, and, I mean, yeah, it's kind of inevitable what happened after that. How did you view the incident? You know, there was a few people criticising Bottas, a few people criticising, I think it was George Russell looked like he kind of kicked off the kickstart at the back of the grid, but I don't know. How did you see it?
Well, I have to say, when we were watching it, like the first time, Bottas seemed really slow to get away. And he's actually come out since and said, yes, he was slow to get away, but that's within the rules. He did everything that he was allowed to do. He just did it to the nth degree. And I think the thing is, like in recent years, the guys haven't waited to the very last meter, the guys who are leading the race, to pull away. And in this case, Bottas did. So the guys further back, they pretty much reacted like they always do. The lights go out. They assume the guy in the front's going to floor it. So they floor it. And unfortunately, the guy in the front hadn't. And we landed up with a massive pile-up, which on the one hand, it added to the excitement of the race. On the other hand, Carlos Sainz was really, really lucky not to get seriously hurt in that crash. Same with Antonio Giovinazzi. Some of the drivers, especially the Mercedes guys, have come out and said that Formula One is actually risking their lives now to try and make the show more exciting. But I don't know. I'm kind of stuck in the middle as to who's responsible. The Mercedes guys at the front, race control, or the guys in the mid pack. I think all of them deserve a bit of responsibility towards this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not a clear cut thing. Yeah, Bottas was really slow to get away, weaving a lot, and at first I thought, well, he shouldn't have done that, but then it's well within the rules, and if that's what he thinks is best for his race, then that's what he's going to do. So ultimately, I think there needs to maybe be more of a change higher up, you know, to ensure stuff like that can't happen again, because, I mean, it's not the driver's responsibility, really. They're just going to do what they're told to do, and that's what Bottas did. And yeah, the back of the field, they just saw the green light and assumed he'd gone already. But yeah, it was, like you said, I think the best thing is just that mainly Carlos Sainz got through unscathed, because it was a scary crash. But yeah, so after that, we got a red flag and then back to a standing start. And then, remarkably, we got another red flag later on in the race. And I'm pretty sure before last week, we hadn't had one in about 3-odd years. Now we've had 3 in 2 races, which is just nuts. But it's brought to light a lot of the rules regarding red flags, which the drivers have, some have complained about, you know, the standing starts, and mainly the rule that you can change tyres when you stop. And then first, what do you think about the fact that we had 2 standing starts after the red flags?
I'm in favour of standing restarts. I think they're fantastic. I think it gives more of an opportunity for things to be mixed up. It definitely does add to the excitement of the show, and therefore I'm in favor of it. What I'm not in favor of, though, is, like you say, some of the rules surrounding it, like Lance Stroll getting the free pit stop last time out. I mean, the rules state in Formula One that you have to pit once to swap tires, and yet he actually did not pit once at the Italian Grand Prix. And then the one that really got to me this weekend was that Kimi and Roman Grosjean were allowed to unlap themselves at the second standing restart. And I'll be honest and say the main reason why they got to me is if they hadn't been allowed to unlap themselves, there is no way George Russell would have not scored a point on Sunday. So I think he has every reason to feel aggrieved by that, as I think Lando Norris has for feeling aggrieved about the free pit stop that Lance Stroll has. I think Formula One needs to look at those rules because, yeah, both of them really did prove to be unfair towards other drivers.
And then the red flag is supposed to suspend the race, you know, it's meant to be same lap. It's meant to be a pause button while the track gets cleared up from whatever caused the flag. And that's not really the case, is it, when cars get to unlap themselves, when cars get to have a free pit stop, because it just entirely changes the race situation. It's not a pause button at all, really. It really does change up the race, and not through the ability or the actions of the drivers themselves. I don't know, I think especially the tyre change, I don't really see why that's in play, to be honest. It's, you know, I get it benefits the drivers, but from an entertainment perspective, I don't see what the thinking is there, to be honest. But yeah, that's how it is, and can't complain too much because the red flags have caused two brilliant races. Maybe we can just add a rule in that if it's a bit dull, the stewards can just wave a red flag willy-nilly whenever they fancy it. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that was most of the carnage of the race. In it, 12 drivers finished, and yeah, there were some pretty darn good performances of those 12 drivers, so let's just take a quick look at those. As has so often been the case this season, I think the only place to start is Lewis Hamilton again, because I don't know, I think heading into qualifying yesterday, I was kind of expecting him to finally have one of those dodgy weekends again where he's just not really on it. You know, we saw him have those weekends so often back in 2016 when he lost the title hunt to Nico Rosberg. And yeah, he hasn't really had that this year, so I kind of expected that, you know. Bottas to look quicker in practice, and he probably would have got a pole position without those yellow flags waved in Q3. And then obviously he got Hamilton at the start, and I kind of thought, okay, looks like this will be a race of Bottas, but as soon as Hamilton gets a sniff of it again, when the field was walked back together, he just took P1 back, and I mean, it wasn't really a competition from there, was it?
No, it definitely wasn't a competition. You know, it's quite funny because if you look at the times from free practice and the sectors and stuff, Hamilton pretty much in all of those was losing time to Bottas in the middle sector. And then they get to Q2 and suddenly things are really starting to actually matter. And he beats Bottas in the middle sector. And then you get to Q3 and he just beats Bottas. And that's the thing with Lewis Hamilton is, like it says on his helmet, "Still I rise." It's incredible how the guy just lifts his level time and time again when it looks like all the odds are against him. Again, didn't have the best of starts. Bottas got ahead of him, gets a second opportunity, not going to make the same mistake. Lewis Hamilton in the lead. Lewis Hamilton, what? Win number 90, one short of Michael Schumacher's record now. Closing in on that world title at a rate of knots. I think I actually saw a headline in one of the newspapers that pretty much said Hamilton has won the title. I mean, he's 55 points ahead. He could take two races off and still be leading the championship. That's how good he is.
By the end of the season, he's going to have the record for the most wins ever. And he's going to have the record, joint record for the most championships ever, which, you know, without any big regulation changes, he's surely going to beat next year on its own. And sometimes I watch it and I just think he's great enough, but he does make this sport a bit boring because he's just so far ahead of the rest of the grid. But I think it's one of those where when he does retire, when he does leave the grid, I think we're going to look back at it and realize that we were kind of witnessing F1 history, F1 greatness right there.
Completely. But unfortunately, like you say, in the here and now, it's a little bit boring. We'd like somebody else to be taking the win, or at least somebody to be fighting him for the win. Valtteri Bottas doesn't have what it takes to fight Lewis Hamilton on a fair playing field, and he doesn't have what it takes to fight Lewis Hamilton in the championship. It's so disappointing. Like every year, it's like, here's Bottas 2 point whatever and Bottas 3 point whatever. And at the end of the day, a couple of races into the season, we have nothing but Bottas disappointment. But like you say, I mean, Hamilton, he's history in the making. He's absolutely phenomenal. He's also got the record for the most podiums. His list of records is literally growing week in and week out. And yeah, like you say, next year, 8th world title, easy peasy.
Yeah, it's looking that way. And we spoke about this in quite a few previous episodes because it's happened so often. Largely, the ease in which he's going to win everything is because Bottas simply can't challenge him. And I mean, yeah, you do have to feel a bit of sympathy for him yesterday, I think. You know, he nailed his start, was looking fairly okay up front, and then, you know, the red flag came and brought them all back together, gave Hamilton the chance to get ahead of him again. But at the end of the day, he did have his chances to get back in it, you know. I mean, and when just over the halfway point of the race when Hamilton had pulled out a huge lead, Bottas said on the team radio that a safety car would be nice right about now. And that's what he got. He got even more. He got another red flag. So he got what he needed. He got the chance to be alongside Hamilton again and just crumbled at the big moment at the restart, really. You know, he ended up losing position to Daniel Ricciardo as well. For a driver like him, how does he keep that belief that he can beat Lewis Hamilton? Because, I mean, all the drivers say that they, you know, they think they're good enough to win the world championship and everything. But, I mean, for him, you just look at it and you think, how can he get in that car every week and genuinely think that he's going to beat Hamilton?
To be honest with you, at this point in time, I don't think he does. He might be saying it. He might be sprouting the right words. But even he's got to acknowledge somewhere deep inside that he's just not on Lewis Hamilton's level. It is what it is. It's like Alex Albon is not on Max Verstappen's level. There are just some people, or in this case, some Formula One drivers, who are in a league of their own, and that would be a guy like Lewis Hamilton. So I think what Bottas has to go into every race is going, well, if Hamilton gets this one wrong, it's mine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's all he can do, really. And if you look at the season, if Hamilton made a mistake, if Hamilton crashed out, then generally Bottas would be pretty well placed to take the win. It just hasn't happened yet. And I don't know, it's hard to see it happening anytime soon, to be honest. But yeah, moving on from the Mercedes drivers, joining them on the podium was Alex Albon for his first ever podium in Formula One, first Red Bull driver to get a podium since Daniel Ricciardo in Monaco in 2018. And yeah, it was the Aussie that he beat to the podium in the end, passing Ricciardo after the safety car restart to take P3. I think it's fair to say the spotlight was on Albon more than ever this weekend. With, one, Pierre Gasly won last weekend at AlphaTauri, which obviously got the rumour mill going again. And then Max Verstappen DNF'd at turn one of this race after being punted by Kimi Raikkonen. So, Albon's always got a lot of pressure on him with that seat, but I think he had more than ever, really. And finally, he delivered, didn't he?
He did too. But yeah, like you said, the pressure was incredible this week. First, it was the Pierre Gasly victory. Then next thing, Sergio Perez is available. Christian Horner may or may not be speaking to Sergio Perez's manager about Sergio Perez or about Sebastian Buemi or about the weather. We're not actually 100% sure. The only thing we do know is he was definitely speaking with Sergio Perez's manager. Pressure on Alex's shoulders. He came out. Great qualifying. Qualified the car fourth. He was still half a second behind Max, but the point of fact is he was fourth. He at least beat the rest. And then, race day, finished third. He was fantastic in the final 20 laps of that race. His pass on Daniel Ricciardo, just easy peasy. It was fantastic to watch Alex at his best. And Red Bull's been saying pretty much since the beginning of the season that when Alex is good, he's really good. And he showed that on Sunday. Now he just needs to find some consistency.
After he got P3, calm down there. After he got P3, his message on the radio to Christian Horner and the team was, thanks for sticking with me. And now I think he's probably secured that seat for another year. It may sound a bit premature, it's only one result. But to be honest, I think that's all Red Bull are looking for, aren't they? They're looking for someone who can be a good number two to Max Verstappen, help him out with his strategies, with his qualifying, which is what Albon's effectively been doing all season. But then also be there to pick up the pieces when Verstappen has a bad race or, gets knocked out at the first corner. And that's what Albon did. His first podium. Hopefully not the last of the season for him. We can pretty much tie him in for a 2021 seat at Red Bull now, can't we?
Yeah, I think after Sunday's result, the contract extension has been signed. He also at one stage, after he took Daniel Ricciardo, he closed in on Valtteri Bottas and it looked like he might even challenge for second place, but that wasn't to be. But the point of fact is Alex now has that first podium. He has every reason to give a huge sigh of relief. And I'm pretty sure Christian Horner and Helmut Marko are sighing as well. But I don't think it's going to put an end to the rumours, not unless he's on the podium again in the next two races. I think this is one that might still have some legs, given the talent that's available for Red Bull to sign should they decide that they do want to change.
Yeah, I think if it was any other team and they had a number two driver struggling as much as Albon, then it would be a no-brainer. I think Sergio Perez or Nico Hülkenberg would be there next season 100%. Zero doubt in my mind about that. I think it's the fact that it is Red Bull and, they haven't had a driver outside of their young driver program since Mark Webber in 2007. And maybe it's a pride thing. Maybe it's a genuine, they think it's better to keep it within the camp. But yeah, they seem really reluctant to go outside of that program, which I don't know. Personally, I think that, Sergio Perez, I'm 100% sure he'd do a better job than Albon. But at the end of the day, Albon delivered yesterday. A few more performances like that and he would have earned a shot, Red Bull seat for next season at the very least. So, yeah, fair play to Alex Albon. Obviously, the big headline going into this race was the fact that it was Ferrari's 1,000th Grand Prix. So I figured that we can't really go through the episode without talking about Ferrari, which is pretty much same as usual. It was a bit better than Spa and Monza at least. They were the only team other than Mercedes to have two cars get to the finish line. What's more, they did get two cars in the points. However, it was sadly P8 and P10. And at the last restart, Kimi Raikkonen looked quicker than both, pulled out a 5-second gap to Vettel. George Russell was all over Sebastian Vettel. The Williams pretty much prevailed in a battle with Vettel for the entire race. How important do you think it is for the sport that Ferrari do get back to where they should be, to where they usually are, especially looking at how dominant Mercedes are out front, and just for the sport as a whole, Ferrari, the biggest name, we really need to see them back at the top soon, don't we?
Absolutely. Like you say, Ferrari is the biggest name in the sport. Yes, Mercedes are doing well. Red Bull's done fantastically well. But Ferrari's the team that's been around there since the beginning. Prior to the start of Sunday's race, they were showing a snippet on TV where they were just speaking to drivers about Ferrari and what it means. And, I mean, from Lewis Hamilton to Nico Hülkenberg to Giancarlo Fisichella from the past to Felipe Massa, drivers were just speaking about how important Ferrari is and how important it is that they do well. Toto Wolff a couple of weeks back came out and said, like, he's actually angry with Ferrari for how much they suck at the moment, for lack of a better word. Because Ferrari's supposed to be up there challenging at the front. So Ferrari's supposed to be leading the way. Mercedes are supposed to be wanting to beat Ferrari, and they can't. I mean, Ferrari, just their form is awful. I think Sunday's result, which was race 9, is only the third time this season that they've even got both cars into the points. I mean, that's Ferrari we're talking about. It was their first points in 3 races, and they were 8th and 10th. And let's be honest, they were 8th and 10th because 12 cars finished the race, not because of their own speed. It's disappointing. Matteo Binotto says there are going to be some updates for the next race at the Russian Grand Prix, but his exact words were, they won't make a difference. That's how bad the SF1000 is at the moment. Ferrari are chasing its tail. They literally need to go back to the beginning and redesign this entire car. But of course, they're in the middle of a crazy season, so there's no hope of that happening. But they need to do something before the end of this year, because this year's car goes into next season.
Yeah, I think that's the worst thing about all this, isn't it? The fact that they can't just bin this car, get a new one for next year. That's not the case. They have to keep it for a whole other year. Yeah, I mean, at this point, they're P6 in the Constructors' Championship, but it's looking fairly likely that they'll drop down to P7 behind AlphaTauri by the end of the year, which is just crazy, really. And yeah, I mean, it's just it really is a massive shame, because, you know, you mentioned that little video clip that they had of all the drivers saying what Ferrari means to them. And I mean, it is a stereotype, but it is true. You know, they are, that is the car that you'll have on your bedroom wall as a kid. You know, I remember I had a Ferrari towel with like the 2005 car. I mean, it's just, they are the face of Formula One ultimately. And I think it does hurt the sport when they're not at the front, especially when there's one team at the front who's so dominant in Mercedes. I don't think they'll be back at the front next season, but yeah, let's just hope it comes around soon. I think it was made all the worse, their struggles this weekend, by the fact that they were at Mugello in Italy, and there are actually fans there this time to kind of witness them languishing at the back of the grid. But Mugello itself is a pretty good showing, really, wasn't it? You know, this is the first new track we'd had on the calendar this season. Unexpected one, obviously, wasn't planned, but what do you think of it? Do you think it deserves another shot for next year?
I think it deserves another shot. It would be interesting to see how the track could evolve. But if you take the carnage out of Sunday's race, was it really an exciting race? Were there a lot of overtakes taking place without the field getting bunched up and stuff? It would be interesting to see Mugello in, well, let's call it a normal race situation. And then decide if it needs a place on the Formula One grid. It was definitely helped by the carnage, the safety cars, the red flags. As a normal racetrack with a clean race from start to finish, I worry it's almost a little bit too fast for the excitement.
Yeah, I don't think we can judge it on this showing, to be honest. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was great for practice, it was great for qualifying, just to see the drivers go at those speeds, taking those fast corners. It was, you know, it was really cool to see, but once the race started, I mean, yeah, obviously we got safety car until lap 9 and then we had a red flag, but I think between the two red flags when it was clean running, yeah, it wasn't the best racing, to be honest. I think we did get quite a few overtakes, but one, that was because the field was bunched up, and two, that's because they had DRS on a big old straight. I'm pretty sure every overtake in the race was at the exact same spot, end of the straight, turn 1. So I think, like you said, without the carnage, I don't think it would have been a particularly good race. And sadly, you can't just rely on carnage happening every time. But I mean, that being said, it's really, really amazing track for qualifying and practice, if not the race. the surroundings are incredible. With fans, I think the crowds would be great as well. And I mean, you know, I don't know. We've got worse tracks on the usual calendar. Let's say that much, you know, looking at the French Grand Prix, for example. But yeah, I think maybe people are getting a bit carried away saying it has to come back next year because of, you know, because of that race. But yes, I don't think it will unless we, you know, have to stay in Europe again because of coronavirus, really. Well, yeah, next up is race number 9 in Sochi, Russian Grand Prix. How do you see that one going? Do you think it's going to be back to, you know, not a new track, less carnage again, just Mercedes cruising at the front?
Yeah, unfortunately, Sochi is not one that really delivers all that often on Formula One. So I'm not expecting a humdinger. I'm not expecting a repeat of the two Italian races. What I am expecting, though, is probably another Mercedes 1-2, unless Max Verstappen hopefully gets a reliable Honda engine that can carry him through to the checkered flag.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's a part of me that, you know, thinks of a normal F1 race with no red flags, no safety cars, and thinks, oh, maybe it'll be a nice change, a welcome break. But I know as soon as the lights go out, I'll be wanting all hell to break loose. I'm sure the drivers will be pleased to see that we do have a two-week break before that happens. So, yeah, that means a two-week break for the podcast as well. We'll be back, yeah, 2 weeks today after the Russian Grand Prix to talk all about what happened. Probably Lewis Hamilton win, Valtteri Bottas second, couldn't challenge him. You know, the usual. And yeah, in the meantime, be sure to keep an eye on our website, planetf1.com, for features, news, whatever else happens in the next few weeks. Perez and Hülkenberg have both said that their future's going to, you know, the board's going to get rolling on that part. So maybe we'll get a good silly season to focus on. Yeah, so keep an eye on our website, keep an eye on our social media channels. Our Facebook is Planet F1 and our Twitter's Planet_F1. And if you're enjoying the podcast, then be sure to leave a review on Apple Podcasts for us. Stay safe and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Bye.
We're funny creatures as humans. Impulsive, stubborn. We procrastinate for eternity and make decisions on a whim. Can we ever say with complete certainty where our choices are going to take us? Just remember, once in a while, we get it right.
You'll never take a wrong turn with Toyota, the world's best-selling hybrid electric cars. Toyota, built for a better world. Claim source, EV volumes and industry data. See toyota.ie/verification.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.